widely mixed trade in the ag markets turned into a solid rally for corn and wheat, while soybeans managed to recover from midday losses. The cattle complex found buying to push to the upside, with June futures now closing higher for a third consecutive day. In hogs, well, yeah, the rug kind of got pulled out from under that market again.
Live from Mouths Without Masks via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll chat with Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Dude, that sounds like some kind of a late 80s, 90s band. Mouths Without Masks.
We all the Mouths Without Masks, right, isn't it?
That's right. Oh, thank you so much for that. That made me laugh.
You know, and I'm not saying I won't wear the mask in the right situations,
right?
But at the moment, I'm in my own home. I'm breathing my own germs. The dogs aren't even nearby. I'm fine.
Yep. It's all good.
Mouths without masks. Yeah,
it's all good. It's all good. Yep. I like I said, you know, I had to make my way to the haircut appointment earlier this week. The only way that she was going to do it was if I had a mask on. And so, you got to do what you got to do to get the services and the products that you need out there. No doubt. All right, man. That's welcome to AgriTalk, everybody. We got a great show for them.
That we do. Yeah.
Always enjoy the conversation. Yes, I always enjoy the conversation with Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing. Uh-huh. We got Oliver coming up here in just a little bit. We've got some news to cover. And let's go ahead and get right to it, because there were some big moves in the markets.
Yeah, you bet. Well, the aggressive short covering that helped corn prices push to the upside early in the session spilled over into the wheat market after midday. Winter wheat futures led the advance in the wheat market as some traders unwound winter wheat, spring wheat spreads. Some traders did point to a hotter and drier forecast for Western hard red winter wheat country as a source of support. July hard red winter wheat, 12 and a quarter cents higher at 464 even. July soft red jumped a dime, 514 and a half. July spring wheat gained 6 whole cents to 514 and a quarter on the day. Chip.
Yeah, we can't, you know, when we think about the reason that the wheat market rallied too, and I'm not saying that the funds are heavily short in this wheat market like they are in corn, but tomorrow's the end of the month for on the trading calendar. So there could have just been some of that short covering in there too.
Sure thing. Well, ethanol production in the weekend of May 22 jumped 61,000 barrels per day to an average of 724,000 barrels per day. The daily production average is now up 35% from the low watermark set just 4 weeks ago, but production is still 34% below the peak of the year set in the second week of January.
Yeah.
Despite the increase in production, ethanol stocks fell 450,000 barrels, and stocks are now 4.5 million barrels below the peak posted 5 weeks ago. For today's rally, however, traders pointed to the end-of-the-month short covering. Yep. Why not? July corn futures 7 cents higher, 327 and a half. September corn gained 6.5 cents, 3.75 and 3/4. December corn closed at 340 and a quarter, up 5 3/4 cents on the day, baby. Feels so good, too.
Yeah, you know, and when you look at the chart, this looks like a significant upside breakout. I mean, it's the highest.
It really does.
It really does. I mean, 7 cents looks huge in this market that we're dealing with right now. Highest close since April 17th. Not a bad move at all.
July bean futures spiked resistance at 850 for a second consecutive session today and failed, unfortunately. Today, prices quickly retreated to support to the 840 level. And then bean prices once again clawed their way back to a mixed close. Much of the pressure on bean prices came after reports that China has booked about 10 cargoes of Brazilian beans this week. That erased speculation that China could increase purchases of U.S. beans to secure a consistent supply of soybeans. July bean futures 1.5 cents lower, 847. August beans slipped a penny to 849 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at 856. That's up a whole 0.5 cent on the day. Chip?
You know, but that July contract is 7 cents off the lows. Okay?
Okay.
It feels, We'll find out from Oliver here in just a couple of minutes what he thinks of the bean market and the corn market and everything. But 7 cents off the lows in that July contract feels like a win. And the way that the market has come back for two consecutive days, it feels like the tide is turning in this bean market right now. So I feel pretty good about it, actually.
Well, Chip, July cotton was 77 points lower, 57.57, and December cotton dropped 49 points to 57.54. The July D spread there is what, at 3 cents right now, I make it today. Is that telling us anything at all on the cotton side?
I don't think so.
Mm-mm. All right.
No, it's, well, no, June, it's hold on,
it's
hold on.
Point
it's
0.3, right?
Yeah, it's 0.03.
0.03
of a cent. Yeah, it's, so it's 0.03 of a cent spread. So you've got that July to D set, just call it even money. And I think it's just because there's so much uncertainty over what China is going to do going forward that we don't have any optimism into the old crop, and there's not a huge reason to have much concern on the new crop either.
All right. Well, on the livestock side, quickly, June live cattle futures were 67.5 cents higher at 101.47.5. August cattle firmed 45 cents to 101.17.5. August feeders, 1.47 higher, 135.50. And June lean hogs were 3.25 lower, 56.92.5. July hogs plunged 3.65 to 55.65 today. Chip.
Yeah, tough day in the hog trade, no doubt about that. Let's bring in Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Oliver, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I think you heard me say it felt like a win in the bean market, and then you look at what happened over in corn. You got to be really impressed. Highest close since April 17th.
Yeah, it is certainly exciting. One day certainly doesn't make a trend, but it is definitely a step in the right direction and a breath of fresh air, to be honest with you. This corn market has just been grueling and just a stick in the mud for the better part of the last month and a half. And it's nice to see a good, strong technical move above resistance. That 320 to 325 pocket has been huge. I think if we can achieve consecutive closes out above here, we're really going to start to spur additional short covering from the funds, which is what we've been watching pretty closely. 245,000 contracts short isn't a record by any means, but it is significant, especially at this time of year where there's still a lot of question marks and a lot of the bad news, honestly, already priced into the market. So it does feel like the tides are turning. Hopefully we can get out above 330. That's the next barrier. That was kind of where the high was. That was support in early April, and then that secondary breakdown point on April 15th. So above 330, I think, opens the door for another leg higher. But with that said, you still going to want to temper the expectations. The fundamentals still aren't all that rosy, but the way the funds are positioned right now, you get a technical close and you get what I would call a just because rally.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. It's kind of like, the rally happens because there's no sellers left in there to push the market to the downside. Cattle,
exactly.
Three consecutive higher closes, dude.
This is a huge level for the August contract, not just here as of late, but really you go all the way back to where support was last August and September with that Tyson plant fire. 101 area, that's right where we're at. A lot of interaction between the bulls and the bears. That's going to be huge. If we can get it close out above there, I think 105 is in the cards. I think getting out above that meaningfully in the near term is going to be a little bit of a stretch.
Very good, Oliver. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week. All right, that is Oliver Slope, Blue Line Future. We got Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing, up next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Join AgriTalk the first week of June for Pork Week, paying tribute to the pork producers who bring lean and nutrient-rich pork to your table. Coverage brought to you by Merck, PIC, United Animal Health, Alltech Hubbard, and Hypor. Learn more at porkbusiness.com.
I'm going to need more bacon.
Too hot.
We always need more bacon. Is there ever enough?
I don't think so.
I don't think I've ever strung the words together. No, please, no more bacon for me. Please, take it away. You know, give mine to the kids. Sorry, kids. You're on your own.
Yeah. What should we do with this extra pound of bacon? Fry it.
Eat it.
Bake it. Do something. How can you call it an extra? All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip. That is Davis. And let's get this conversation started with Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing. Sam, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing well. Sun's shining here today, fortunately, because I think there's a lot of rain falling some other places here, causing a lot of flooding, it looks like, down in Missouri.
Yeah, absolutely. This morning on the first hour of AgriTalk, Sam, I talked about nice gentle rain that we are getting here at the Flory Ranch, and we ended up with about 1.3, 1.4 inches of rain. Oh, it ended about 11 o'clock, 11:30, something like that. And I hadn't really looked at too many rainfall totals from the area. And Davis, I don't know if you saw them either or not, but over at Jessup, just 30 miles, well, Ben Renchie was on the Farmer Forum yesterday. Over in his neck of the wood, they got like 6.5 inches over there, Sam. We sure didn't need that.
No, especially on these freshly planted crops. You know, a lot of this stuff may not even be emerged yet. So it's going to add to some of these replant issues, I think, that we've seen across a lot of places in the central and eastern Corn Belt. But all in all, I don't think it's going to be enough on its own to really make a major change. I think it'll be the same thing with prevent plant.
Yeah. I was talking to Ken Ferry yesterday morning, too, Farm Journal Agronomist, Crop Tech Consulting. And, I kept wanting to make a comparison to 2019 for some of these guys. And you really can't do that because in so many cases, they got the crop planted. So we are talking about replant issues, not talking about let's get it stuck in the ground for the first time issues. There was some of that, too, though, and a lot of that was up in the northwest production areas, right, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're going to have a carryover all that into this year. A lot of crops not even harvested up there yet. Yeah. And I think when you, from what I've been hearing, at least around here, and we had a lot of this last year, it seems like it's a lot easier for guys to walk away from it this year because they're walking away from maybe 80 acres, 160 instead of 1,200 acres or 2,200 acres. So the number of there. But the overall volume just isn't going to be seen. And you know, with what we're looking at on a balance sheet, again, it's just not enough on its own.
Well, and the revenue incentive isn't there to try to stick something in the ground like it was a year ago, right?
The revenue incentive isn't there. And you know, look at all the headaches we've had. I mean, look at the quality issues we've had, the test weight issues, you know, the bushels that you thought were in the bin that really weren't, that harvest even as late as it went in.
Right. Okay. So, where do we end up on corn planted acres then? USDA, well, I should say farmers intended at the end of March to plant 97 million acres to corn. Where do you think we end up on that?
You know, I guess I'm struggling to think that we'll be much over 95 personally. I think with the metrics of it having kind of really hit the skids there in March with the COVID-19 situation and maybe just enough wet weather here across the eastern central Corn Belt. And like I said, parts of the Dakotas that we just can't quite exceed that. But, you know, can you cut it much from there? I think it's way too early to say that. I think, you know, at the end of the day, I think we all knew the yield is going to be the big kicker at this point. It will be interesting to see how much we get switched over to soybeans late here as we get some of these final plant dates passing.
Right. You know, I think I agree with you on that, Sam. The only way that we get much below 95 million acres is if the 97 million intentions was wrong to begin with, and it was really 95 and we end up at 93 or something like that. But based if we're going to start at 97, then, 95 feels about right. Still a big crop, isn't it?
Still a big crop. You put a trend yield on that, you're still over, 15.5 billion bushels, so but make note of all of this. All these little things could add up later on in the year, especially if our demand comes back in a bigger way. And, you know, it's still early from a yield standpoint, but, same breath, it's too early to hurt it, too.
Yeah. So you mentioned the movement of some acres over to soybeans. End of March, farmers intended to plant 83.5 million. Where do we go there?
I guess I'm looking for something maybe closer to 85 there. I think you could maybe carry over some acres from wheat that could get abandoned too. In these areas of Kansas where they dealt with, you know, frost and drought conditions, still dealing with some of the drought conditions there in western Kansas. So it'll be interesting then over the next basically 30 days of what could still happen yet there. And maybe what happens with trade here over the next 30 days in these headlines. I'm just seeing that there's a press conference now scheduled for tomorrow on China, Trump announced. So if we see any more, you know, trade escalation or something like that to really impact price movement, it could still impact acres.
Well, he's going to say something to tick him off. I mean, he telegraphed that earlier this week when he said something really big and very interesting will be announced regarding China by the end of the week. So, you know, that's been telegraphed. Hopefully it's been accounted for in the markets. But there's no way of predicting what he's going to say or what he's going to do at this point.
No, there's not. I think, you know, as you mentioned, to say something to tick them off, I think you can almost guarantee that. But even thus far, we've kind of seen those tensions, but we haven't seen a full-on re-escalation of tariffs or anything like that to really interfere with trade. And in the meantime, we continue to see China nibbling at the edges. You know, let's not get wound around the axle about a trade deal falling apart, because I really don't think they were making big strides towards it anyways when you look at the business that's been done out of Brazil over the last couple months.
And more this week, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Jeez. You know what? I got to go back to the acres for just a second, Sam. That 95-85 combination and give you 180 million total between corn and soybeans. I feel like that number should be a 178, a 177.5, something like that. It feels heavy. And I know that most people are thinking that this 180 number is the right number, but just the lack of revenue potential and just the lack of incentive to plant either corn or soybeans, it feels to me like we're going to back off some. Maybe it's just wishful thinking.
Oh, and I would use those numbers as ceiling targets as well. I would agree with that.
Okay.
And keep in mind, harvested acres comes into this as well at the end of
sure.
the year. And you mentioned it, the incentive to go out there and replant, the incentive to go out there and seed late. Look at the incentive we had late last year to go out there and seed corn and how much more corn we seeded in the Mid-South because of price alone. So, yeah. And this ties into what we may get to here too when we look at basis down the road here. We talk about all these big crops and everything, and we could still have that, yes. But we're going to have a lot more storage space this year because it's easier to pile corn on the ground compared to soybean.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. As long as we're talking about differences between last year and this year and everything, basis last year just on fire. For old crop, it was on fire. For new crop, it was very, very good. Right now, Sam, Clint, ADM and Clinton, between you and me, is going to be open on Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, I think, is a full day. They're going to be open. They're begging to get corn in there, and they can't get it. I don't know what's going to happen on basis for old crop and that new crop basis. I think there's even bigger question marks there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people wanted to throw in the towel early on about the whole ethanol industry in general and the fact that we've seen so far, no hiccups with the recovery, but it is early. This fuel usage, you know, you look at ethanol stocks, you know, we continue to wind those down pretty good because fuel usage is increasing faster than we can get these ethanol plants online. And this is a situation, you know, looking at bids across parts of Nebraska even today, large regions bidding the same amount for corn. And this tells me that they're all willing to get in. No one wants to get in with both feet, but they also don't want to be the last person in the pool. And I think that's going to be the trend here. But at some point, you know, something's got to give. And we're in a situation here where people are going to need corn for feed. The export market is nice and steady, and now ethanol is coming back into the equation. So you could have a 30 to 45 day period where things could get a little bit interesting, even though we have big supplies.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, on the DDG side of things and the lack of production there that the livestock guys have had to be dealing with, the slowdown on the rations that they've put out there, I think it uses more corn, uses less protein, and I don't know if that is going to move some numbers and give our second quarter corn for feed use a boost or not. Have you heard any comments on that at all, Sam?
Not specifically, but what I do know is it's not easy to just switch back and forth overnight, you know, and we really hit, you know, a big bump in the road when this whole situation took place. And, you know, I don't know if the market's going to be quick to just reverse right back to where we were. I think we've already seen that across many markets.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Okay. We got
to
talk.
Safe to assume the corn's there.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. Hey, you know, when we come back, I want to get into some of the strategies that Sam is thinking about for risk management right now. And of course, we got to talk what's going on in cattle and hogs. We'll do that next on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. U.S. to revoke special arrangements on trade with Hong Kong. Tit for tat, China has vowed to retaliate if the U.S. takes strong actions over its Hong Kong moves. Back to normal at a Brazilian port, the loading of soybeans, grains, and other products has resumed after a positive case of COVID-19 and a crew member halted action at the berth for 24 hours. COVID-19 outbreaks at U.S. plants continue. At least 400 workers at Tyson Foods pork and turkey plants in Storm Lake, Iowa have tested positive. Some at-home workers now say they are just fine working from home and would like to do so permanently. And China's biggest hog producer hopes to triple output over the next 4 years. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer. Just go to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
That was too good. That was on my YouTube this weekend.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Had to get a little eastbound and down. All right, we're talking to Sam Hudson today, Corn Belt Marketing. Before we get back to that, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 12 and a quarter cents higher today. That's at 464 even. July soft red jumped a dime, 514 and a half. July corn futures, 7 cents higher, 327 and a half. December corn closed at 340 and a quarter. That's up 5 3/4 cents. July soybean futures 1 1/2 cents lower at 847. Novi beans closed at 856. That's up a half cent today. July cotton 77 points lower at 5757. On the livestock side, June live cattle were 67 1/2 cents higher at 10147 and a half. August feeders a buck 47 and a half higher, 13550. June lean hogs 325 lower, 5692 and a half. That's your quick market recap, Chip. Now back to you.
Thank you, sir. All right, Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing, is our guest today. Sam, that move in the wheat market, that was pretty impressive today. What'd you make of that? And it seems like it hit the corn took off first, but boy, when wheat hit the afterburners, it really took off.
I think after, you know, you see the September contract now, which is the one I'm watching, we went down and tested the $5 mark, made a reversal. A lot of people looking for some sort of harvest type of low in here. And if you get some power moves up like this, maybe that can confirm it. I don't think you're going to find a lot of willing sellers, and you still got a little bit of dry conditions in parts of Western Europe and in the Black Sea region.
Yeah. Well, Western Europe, Black Sea, and the Western areas of the U.S. Central Plains, where I think a lot of that crop damage and those lost bushels, Colorado, Western Kansas, a lot of that's already been factored into prices, though, hasn't it? You're kind of cutting out on us there, Sam. Let's we just lost Sam. Hopefully we can get him back in here. Think back to the winter wheat tour that happened at the start of May. Went into Colorado and came out of that state with a big cut to what was it? We got Sam back. A big cut to what
roughly
was
half from a year ago,
from,
right?
Yeah, about half of what they had a year ago out of Colorado. That was a combination of acres and a drop in yields, those fewer acres and that drop in yield. So, Sam, the dry conditions that are down there, you know, every time the drought monitor gets updated, I just kind of glance down there, and you wonder if it would spread to the east and to the north a little bit. It might happen, but if it does happen, does it really matter for these markets? Well, the market's going to be slow to respond, won't it?
I think so. I mean, especially after what you saw last year, what we think crops can go through anymore. You know, just the sentiment in general, demand is, you know, on its haunches, and you know, everyone thinks it can't recover. Can it respond? The answer is definitely yes, but I think that's more of a July, August type of issue. You know, at this point, if anything, you know, we need some warmth to get this stuff up and going, get the roots down, and if not for nothing, that can help the crop later on in its life cycle anyways. And so I don't think there's an immediate risk there right now. I don't think it's, you know, a big situation to call for drought at this point.
Right, right. Okay, so strategy, risk management, corn and soybeans. Talk both as we go through here. For guys that still have some of last year's crop unpriced in the bin, what do they do here, Sam?
Well, this is going to come down to a very, you know, localized and specific situation with your basis. Yep. And, you know, we've seen a marked difference on some of these river markets versus ethanol-heavy markets. We're just now starting to see these western you know, bids start to perk up in Nebraska with the ethanol market starting to, you know, sniff around the edges. The river market's been pretty steady. In the markets where you've got both of those working together, there's actually still been some opportunities along the way here when all the selling dried up, but I don't think that's going to last. And either a futures price rally or finally the basis improving enough to crack those bushels loose is going to happen. I think we're on the front half of this at this point. And, you know, another 15 cents in flat price might be all we need.
Okay.
So, you know, when you think about price rally, though, new crop, I think, is where the bigger opportunity is.
Okay.
And I think the old crop, you got to just find a way to cut and run from that. We know at least mostly what we're getting from aid payments. There could be more coming down the road, but at least it's a reference point. For new crop, you've got insurance to back you up. And I think on a case-by-case basis, it is unfortunate that we're talking about those metrics this early in the year. But you've got almost as much risk out here pricing something and not backing yourself up if something were to happen, like a drought, or something really reverse winds with trade.
Okay. I've had some guys say, geez, do we need to make a move to lock in some sort of a spring low, and an insurance payment or a PLC payment, something like that. But that would mean getting long in a market that they're already long, right?
Yeah, the answer to that is no, you don't have to.
Right.
So, can you? Yes. But, you know, I think this all comes down to time frames. I mean, you know, let's not throw the towel in on the corn market. I think, you know, 350 plus futures at this point right now is a gift. But you fast forward 6 months from now, it's a different situation altogether because we have no idea on yield. So short term versus long term, if you don't want to store it out that long anyways, you know, look for your opportunities here over the next few weeks and on any weather scares if we get them.
Right. Right. Okay. So give it a little time. Don't panic, right?
Don't panic. And, you know, I mentioned this, you know, earlier, but just about overall supplies. We are going to have the potential for a big crop this year, but a lot of easier to pile that corn on the ground. We've been finding, you know, and I just don't, you know, some people thought that the harvest basis was just going to disappear. I don't necessarily think that's the case, especially at these price levels.
Okay. All right. Very good. Let's jump over to livestock, buddy. 3 days up in the live cattle trade. It feels like maybe we've got there's potential here again, it feels like.
It feels like it, and, you know, I think the cattle on feed numbers kind of stay this story. We're 95% of a year ago with on feed percentages. Still lower, but think about our demand losses, you know, relative to that. And the placement figures, when you look at those, I think that's where you're building a bigger burn down the road is these back months and it's just hard to see a lot of the downside right now unless we start to get into some, you know, problems with, you know, COVID-19 outbreaks again. You know, for the short term, though, we got a lot of backlog, a lot of cattle out there, a lot to chew through. Slaughter's getting better. It's great to see that. I agree with you. You got to see, you know, upticks in these weekend kills to get things back on track. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and expect we're going to get back to 100% of normal and just chew through all of it until, you know, all these, you know, supply and demand chains are back to normal again.
Right. You know, I'm a little surprised that this feeder cattle market is, I'm going to get shot at for saying this. I'm a little surprised that this feeder cattle market has acted as well as it has. And I'm not talking just about the futures market, but some of these sale barns, it's held up better than I thought it would. And cause I on the feed yard side of things, if you've got cattle backed up, the last thing you're looking to do is add to your problem.
Well, it is, but keep in mind, you got a lot of government money coming. You know, we've kind of had a short-term recovery where guys have been able to move some, you know, some level of inventory. You know, this hog market, you know, this hog side of it's a lot, you know, worse and a lot messier. You know, but from a beef side, you know, guys have kind of find nook and crannies to find places to put cattle. They know we got money coming at them. And I think this now is a 2 to 3 month stretch where we just find a wide ranging market. You know, the spot month, it's going to be hard to see a lot of downside, but do we have to race a lot higher right now? I mean, look at where boxed beef prices went. Now they're going on the way back down. So the more we increase the slaughter, the more those boxed beef prices are going to start to curtail a bit.
Right, right. Okay. You said it, this hog market, boy, it looks really rough after the last couple of days, big downside gap today. Just we could kill at 100% capacity for 3 weeks, Sam, and it's not enough to get current.
No, and it's just a clinky chain there. I mean, the gestational cycle, you know, is just so short. You know, where animals have, you know, had to have been destroyed. I know they're doing that to the heavier weight stuff because they don't want to create a hole down the road. But, you know, the more you do that, when the demand doesn't come back, you kind of, you know, continue along with the same problem. And, you know, I guess it's hard to get bearish under 50 on these markets. I think that's a buying opportunity. Keep an eye on the lean hog index. And obviously trade is going to have a, you know, big impact on sentiment here.
Yeah. You know, the fall and winter month contracts, I wonder if they've got factored in the idea that sow liquidation and just guys aborting pigs, maybe some euthanization on some of those younger pigs out there too. It's going to tighten up supplies for fall and winter as well. And I don't know if that's factored into prices yet, Sam.
I agree with you, and I think it's going to be hard to put a finger on it too, because this thing is so fluid and moving so quickly. Yeah, you know, true. It's going to be something we're constantly looking at retroactively and kind of doing postmortem, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, do you feel any urgency? I know that you said in hogs you don't really feel like you need to get much done under $50, and that makes a lot of sense to me. But is there any risk management strategies that you do like
in the hogs specifically?
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, I hate to say it on here, but really, I think, you know, strangle opportunities are going to be out there with the increase in volatility, because these markets are going to find some sort of norm. And I think that's what we're after here. And I think it's the same thing in the energy markets. They've had a pretty stout recovery here, but they're not going straight up. They're trying to find some sort of an upper end of a range of comfort before we can kind of normalize. So I think those kind of strategies work, especially if you can afford contract and maybe get some option sales on the books where you're willing to contract more and own more back. Moving forward here, and I would think that for the short term, you get past August, it's a big difference.
Okay, get past August, there's a big difference out there. Yeah, okay. Hey, Sam. Hey, real quick, thank you for tagging us in those tweets on Fridays with the summary of the Commitment of Traders report. We really appreciate that, man.
Hey, it's always something to keep an eye on, especially getting into situations like this. It, you know, no reason to rally, and here we are.
Yep. Excellent. Thank you, Sam. That is Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing. Davis and I will wrap things up when we come back on AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on for our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk.
Jeez, now old Van Halen.
Yeah.
The hits just keep coming.
You're loving it, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, good. From your very, very, very specialized lawnmower shop.
That's right. We are so specialized, so focused on the customer's need that we only offer a single service.
That's right.
If you run over a trampoline spring in your yard, we can fix it. What about chicken wire? No. What about some fence? No. Only trampoline springs.
Can you check my oil?
No. Only trampoline springs.
Love it. All right. Hey, the inflation argument, I didn't get there to that point with Sam.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We didn't hear much about inflation this week. It was kind of heating
up. I had
up,
to bring it up.
A week ago, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw this tweet earlier from at Hort Versailles. He says, I keep hearing analysts saying, we should expect some corn price inflation. Will that really happen with so much on the farm? And he quote tweeted a quote from Matt Campbell from FC Stone. It says, per tract data, farmer corn sales January through May are the slowest by far over the past 6 years, even adjusted for supplies. Matt said, it is there. It is just not being sold. At some point, it's got to move.
Right.
So when I saw, I knew that Sam wanted to talk about basis. And I was really glad to see that, because I think there's still an expectation out there that, because doggone it, ethanol is coming back. Doggone it, look at what basis did a year ago. Doggone it, right. Basis has just got to get better. No, it doesn't. I don't know if it doesn't have. I'm not saying that it won't, but it doesn't have to get better.
Okay.
And with all the corn that is still out there and still has to flow to the end users, mm-hmm. I'm not convinced that it's going to get better. And
let me get, yeah.
It,
I'm looking at, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you.
Well, I'm looking at ProFarmers midweek cash report from last night. We do it every week. We collect a national average corn basis. Looks like we're up another 0.75 cents. We were up 0.25 cents last week, up now 0.75 cents over the past week to 1.25 cents above the July.
Right.
Cash price is up, looks like 1.75 cents at 3.21 3/4 nationally there, but better than the 3-year average, which is 6.25 cents below.
Right. Right.
So I don't know if you call that basis strength or not.
And,
but
the, and I mean, we've got, The end users are doing everything that they can to make it as convenient as possible for guys to bring corn in if they are open and if they are operational, because
right.
there are some of the ethanol facilities out there that are still shut down. But if you're open and operational, the weekend hours that I'm seeing posted are mm-hmm. kind of unbelievable.
Yeah,
they really are. They are doing everything that they can to make it as easy as possible for anybody to haul corn into their mm-hmm. facilities. They're giving them lots mm-hmm. of time to do it. So you could do, you know,
time.
Another thing that they could do is jack up basis and probably get some stuff to move.
I'm sure they could get it to move pretty quickly, but you know, is this an opportunity buy? Is it a buy of necessity? I mean, honestly, looking at prices, dude, and as many people as are saying, well, it could be we're, you know, working on a bottom here, as long as we've been sideways for this period of time, maybe now is the time that you want to dive in with both feet and fill your buckets and your pockets, if you can, with as much corn as you can bring in.
Yeah, if you're a livestock guy, it's something that you want to be looking at, maybe. If you're an end user, you definitely need to be looking at the opportunities that are there. Okay, after all the rain that we've had the past few days, and especially over the past 24 hours here in our part of the world, Davis, the U.S. Drought Monitor, which was released today, and it's valid as of Tuesday. So because it's valid as of Tuesday, there are still some dry pockets, West Central, Southwest Iowa, and Northern and Northeast Iowa into Southwest Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then you got to get down into Southeast Nebraska, Western Kansas, the Panhandle of Oklahoma, Eastern Colorado, Panhandle of Texas, where Eastern Colorado, we've actually got a D3, which is extreme drought. Drought.
Okay.
So the drought monitor key here is none, so no drought, mm-hmm. which covers most of the Midwest. D0 is abnormally dry. D1 is moderate drought. D2 is severe drought. D3 is extreme drought. D4 is exceptional drought. I don't see any D4 on the map right now, but there are some spots of extreme drought out there. It's And if that would tend to sneak its way in from the southwest into the middle of the belt, into eastern Nebraska, western Iowa, into South Dakota, that could be a price mover. Now, National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for June 3rd through the 7th. You guys, take a look at it. The PNW's got below normal temperatures. New England's got below normal temperatures. But in the middle of the country, there is a huge blob of above normal temperatures expected.
Whoa. Okay.
Really, really high odds of above normal temperatures. And then the below normal precipitation, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, southeast Nebraska, southwest Iowa, Missouri, southern Illinois, and points to the south and east of there. So weather could become something that we're going to be watching, Davis.
All right. Well, I guess we got to watch something, right?
Well, I just soon watch that nice recovery in ethanol production that is taking place. And every time I say that,
too.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. every time I say that, I think to myself, yeah, but we're still a third off of the high of the year. We still got a long ways to go to get the recovery. Okay, for Davis and for producer, for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Tomorrow morning, free for all. Randy Russell, Pam Johnson, Sean Haney, and tomorrow afternoon, we're talking pigs. Christine McCracken from Rabobank. We'll be right here on AgriTalk.